Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
It's time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today, we'll be looking at a fan favorite from our fan, Chad. We're looking at the 1988 sports comedy, Bull Durham. With me, our Ted.
Ken's got a million-dollar arm, but a five-cent head.
Can't argue with that. And Ken?
I'm the player to be named later.
All right. Ken, Ted, Sears sucks. Crash. Boy, I once worked there. So, Lady Kenmore's nasty. Oh, nasty.
Sounds nasty.
And if you worked at Sears, you'll know what I'm talking about. We're talking Bull Durham.
We shop at Sears. I mean, that's bad enough of that.
Wow. Come on. Be nice.
I mean, they're gone, aren't they?
Pretty much.
For the most part, they
98%
are.
98%
of them. Yeah. You could have a whole podcast that's dedicated to the demise of Sears. Well, why don't you tell the nice people out there the synopsis of Bull Durham?
In Durham, North Carolina, the Bulls minor league baseball team has one asset no other can claim, a poetry-loving rookie named Annie Savoy. As the team season begins, Annie selects brash new recruit Penny Cabin Baluch, whom she christens Nuke, to inspire with the religion of baseball. Nuke also receives guidance from veteran player Crash Davis, who sells Nuke's erratic pitching and teaches him to follow the catcher's lead. And that's a synopsis of Bull Durham.
All right, Ted, tell us the particulars of this one.
Okay, Bull Durham is directed by Ron Shelton with a screenplay by Ron Shelton. It has a running time of 108 minutes, a release date of June 15th, 1988. It had a budget of $9 million, a box office gross of $50.9 million. It has a Rotten Tomatoes critic score of a certified fresh 97% and an audience score of 82%, and it has an IMDb rating of 7.0.
I'm surprised the audience score is only 82.
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that as well. Thought it would be a little closer. Bull Durham stars Kevin Costner as Crash Davis, Susan Sarandon as Annie Savoy, Tim Robbins is Ebby Calvin Nuke LaLouche. Trey Wilson is Joe Skip Riggins. Robert Wool as Larry Hockett. Jenny Robertson is Millie. And Max Patkin, the clown prince of baseball, as himself.
Right. Max Patkin, the clown prince of baseball. How about that?
Oh. How about that?
How about that? That's right. So, Ken, tell us some of the productions and awards this movie garnered.
Well, this movie is loosely based on a true guy, Steve Dalkowski, who pitched in the minor leagues. I guess rumor had it that he could throw well over 100 miles per hour. But he would have seasons like where he would pitch like 160 innings, but he would strike out 230 guys, but then he would walk 220 guys. So there was a kind of guy like this.
I'm assuming he never made it to the majors?
Never made it to the majors, though. Okay. No. He never had a moment where he figured it all out. And he hurt his arm in spring training, I think with the Baltimore Orioles. It could be wrong with the team. And once he hurt his arm, he lost the velocity.
And now he's working at Sears.
Now he's dead.
Oh, great. COVID. Way to bring us down. COVID killed him? Oh, man.
COVID finished him off. So.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Jeez Louise.
What a turn.
Happy days. So filming began on this movie on October 5th, 1987, and wrapped on November 30th, 1987. So this was filmed between Halloween and Thanksgiving. All this stuff was going on. If you actually watch like outtakes and stuff, you could see the cold air coming out of their breath.
It's still in the movie, too.
They actually had scenes where they had to have people like chewing on ice. Their mouth was cold, so when they spoke, they didn't have that come out, and then or holding their breath during certain scenes. And they had a spray paint the grass green because some of it was turning brown already.
He's great.
I wonder why they started so late. I mean, minor league baseball, ends roughly around beginning of September. They should have been able to start this like mid-September and easily got it in. And Susan Strata talks about having Thanksgiving at her house and cooking for everybody. So I thought that was kind of cool. The writer director Shelton cast Costner because of the actor's natural athleticism. Actually, I saw him in a sports movie before this called American Flyers.
Yeah, he's riding bikes around.
Costner was also a former high school baseball player. And then he cast Robbins over strong objections from the studio, who wanted Anthony Michael Hall. But Shelton threatened to pull out if the studio didn't back out. He really liked Robbins's performance. In fact, he liked it so much, the ball player was originally supposed to be left-handed. Was supposed to be a left-handed pitcher, but Tim Robbins can only throw right, so he's like, well, then we'll switch it. And then the producer, Tom Mount, was also a part owner of the Durham Bulls at the time, and he also hired Pete Brock, who was a former semi-pro baseball player himself, and became a consultant on the film. And they got a bunch of minor league players, and they had tryouts. Maybe that's why it took so long for them to start in October.
Well, they probably had to wait for the season to end, too. And
the minor league season, like I said, ends the first week of September.
Yeah, but you got to get...
That's why we have those call-outs in September for Major League.
Yeah, but you got to get all the... You got to get staff out there, cameras, got to get set up, scouting. It takes time.
And then I guess after all that, they wanted to make sure that Tim Robbins didn't actually play baseball, so they went out and had him and Costner playing catch on the back lot over at Universal. And then as far as awards go, it didn't really win any major awards. It won the Best Screenplay in 1988 by the New York Film's Critics Circle, whatever that means. In 2003, Sports Illustrated ranked Bull Durham as the greatest sports movie ever.
That's interesting. Awards
here, but...
Yeah.
I also read that Grady Little, who's right now a major league manager, was a consultant on this movie, too.
I forgot to mention Robert Worrell bombed his audition. He showed up, like, ultra-ly hyper. You've seen him in movies like Arliss and things like that.
Yeah,
He's just, Batman. Like, a hyper guy, right?
Yeah.
So he went in there just, like, manic. And they basically said, that's the worst audition anybody's ever had with us. You're hired.
So, you're hired.
So
it's like in Ted when he's applying at the grocery store,
right?
You know, yeah. With the manager. Yes. I've never had anyone talk to me like that before. You're hired.
Yes. That's what I got right now for production and awards.
Cool. All right. Well, let's start with Ted. Ted, when's the first time you saw this movie?
I remember the first time my mom and dad saw the movie because I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah.
So it was probably high school. It's one of those movies it's hard to pinpoint exactly the first exact time I saw it, but it's always been a favorite.
Yeah, exactly for me too. I can't tell you. I know I didn't see it in the theater, and I know I didn't see it first run. I probably saw it on VHS rental or something, but I do remember loving it. But yeah, it definitely was a definite eye-opener. with the language and the content and stuff, but
yeah,
I did not see it with my parents. I might add too. So.
Yeah, no, me neither. But I know that they watched it. So,
and Ken, we know cable for you, right?
Oh yeah, definitely cable. Mm-hmm. Probably 1989, probably the year after it came out.
Sure. Well, why don't we just move into this movie and let's talk about part one?
The Single A minor league baseball team, the Durham Bulls, are dealing with another sparsely attended losing season. With one thing working for them, Eddie Calvin Lalouche, a hotshot rookie pitcher known for having a $1 million arm but a 5-cent head, was him, not me, who has the potential to become a major league talent. Brad Stevens is a 12-year veteran in the minor league baseball system and is set down as the team's catcher to educate Lalouche. Gradually begins calling Eddie by the degrading nickname of Meat, and they get off to a rocky start. Thrown into the mix is Annie, that baseball groupie and lifelong spiritual seeker who has latched on to the Church of Baseball, as every year chosen one player on the Bulls to be her lover and student. Annie flirts with both Crash and Eddie and invites them to her house, but Crash locks out, saying he's too much of a veteran to try out for anything. Before he leaves, Crash further sparks Annie's interest with a memorable speech. listing the things he believes in, ending with, "I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, white kisses that last 3 days." Despite some animosity between them, Annie and Crash work in their own ways to shape Emmy into a big league pitcher, and Annie plays mid-bondage games, reading poetry to him, and gets him to think in different ways, and gives him the nickname Nuke. Crash forces Nuke to learn not to think by letting the catcher make the pitching calls. Memory, the 2 points telling the batters what pitch is coming after Nuke shakes off his signs, and lectures him about the pressure of facing major league hitters who can hit heat. Crash also talks about the pleasure of life in the major league, which he briefly lived for 21 of his greatest days of his life, and to which he has tried for years to return. As Nuke matures, the relationship between Annie and Crash grows until it becomes obvious that the two of them are a more appropriate match, except for the fact that Annie and Nuke are currently a couple. And that's the end of part one.
There's a lot to digest in that. So
we're
assuming
that got out of here in a hurry.
Yeah, right. Love it. That's just a great scene.
Anything that flies that far should have a stewardess on it, don't you
right,
think?
Right. Yeah. The lines in this movie. I mean, obviously, we always kick off our podcast with a movie line, and just trying to decipher which line you want to use is just, in this movie, is really hard to do. There's just so many great lines.
It's an excellent
lollygaggers.
Yes. Lollygag is.
You lollygag down to first base. You lollygag out to the outfield. What does that make you? Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. The casting in this movie is so perfect. I can't imagine other people in the role, especially Anthony Michael Hall. Ugh. So, whatever.
Dear
luckily,
God,
good
no.
taste prevailed.
Well, at the same time, Jim Robbins is in his early 30s at this particular time, and I think Michael Hall would be the appropriate age for a minor league baseball player.
Yes, but for a minor league baseball player who has spent his whole career in the minors, it actually, the look of him is perfect.
But he hasn't spent his whole time in the minors. For someone like, let's say, Crash Davis, Kevin Costner.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Crash Davis, yes.
But
all you're talking about
is Tim Robbins.
LaLouche. Yes.
But it does work for Robbins because Robbins looks a lot younger
than
his age. So it works perfectly fine. And Costner, because there's only a 3-year age difference between Costner and Robbins. So, and Costner looks, I guess, age appropriate at 36 for a journeyman minor league baseball player that's played all over and, you know, has had baseball's basically taken a gigantic dump on him.
He looks tired. He walks into the manager's office.
Yeah.
He even says, What am I doing back? What am I doing back in A-ball? Why am I here? And he basically is now a mentor. He's just trying to hang on, and he's demanding if he should. He walks out, and they sit there, and they're just kind of like waiting for him to come back into the room.
It's like, what time's practice?
Yeah. But it is funny seeing the managers there, and I take it that's like assistant manager or pitching coach. He's blowing up the Ospreyer balloon
thing. Oh, yeah.
Minor league ball, man. They do everything.
Jacks of all trades, basically.
Well,
that's what he sits on in the dugout.
Yeah.
that's like his
cushion?
Yeah,
his orthopedic cushion. Yeah.
The movie does start off with us getting to see Evie inside the locker room, and he's having a
relationship
program with Ritual, I guess you could say. He's having relations with
even
Millie.
Before that, let's talk about the actual opening scene here with that great, and I just call it a monologue because that's what it is.
A wonderful monologue
from Susan Sarandon, really talking about, you know, the Church of Baseball, the minor league baseball in this town and this team. It's such a great buildup to the beginning of the first game. As she's walking into the stadium, you just feel the anticipation. This is her religion. This is her way of life, is this baseball team. And you can feel it in that monologue. It's just a wonderful opening scene.
It's a great tribute to baseball too.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it's as good as James Earl Jones's speech at the end of Field of Dreams.
I'm one of the few people that's not really overly It doesn't blow me away. No, it doesn't. It's not really impressive. It doesn't blow me away. I think her buildup is far better. So, Ken, we were talking about this probably weeks ago. Maybe you don't remember. The one thing about this movie, especially as you're walking in, you know, that scene, you're walking in the stadium. This is true minor league baseball in 1988. There's no real technology. You don't have the internet. You don't have smartphones. Everything is still the way baseball was. Bare bones, players trying to get drafted into the majors. And it's just a lot of fun. I feel today, you know, when you're going to a baseball game, even a minor league game, there's just so much distraction. And I know this minor league ball has distractions, obviously, but it doesn't have that same feel as sitting in the crowd. And maybe you got your scorecard and you're sitting there and you're watching the game. It's so easy to be distracted watching baseball today. And this movie really tells you the essence of baseball. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's just such a great testament to sports and to baseball in itself.
But I also like the fact that, you know, we talk about Susan Sarandon's character at the beginning of this film and her speech at the beginning, but she narrates the film here and there throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a way, this movie is told, it's a story told by her. It's about how she looked at the season of the Durham Bulls and what they went through and what she went through. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of her telling the story. But then again, it probably is a good balance between the two.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think the one thing that is probably not real, though, the other ball players, minor league ball players, especially they interviewed some of the Durham Bulls that played during that period of time, right, late 80s, early 90s. They said all that kind of stuff would happen except for the sex in the locker room.
That's over the top. I get it.
Yeah, that's a little bit over the top. If you had a scene maybe where, you know, he's back at his dorm room or whatever, you know, most of these ball players actually
hotels,
hook up.
Yeah.
Well, they actually hook up usually with a family.
With a family, yeah.
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 Because I know that's what the Kane County Cougars, because when I worked in St. Charles, there were families in St. Charles that put up the Kane County Cougars players.
Yeah. We actually considered doing it ourselves for one season. We thought about doing it, but we had young kids, we decided not to do it, but that would have been fun and interesting. But that kind of thing doesn't happen in the locker room. And I mean, the first thing you're seeing is Tim Robbins' bare butt.
Yeah. Welcome to baseball.
You're on in 5 minutes. Okay. Just need a little quickie here and then we'll go back out. I do like how she sends a rabbit to ask her. He's like, so what do you think? He's like, sex is like hunting pitches. It's kind of like all over the place. The girl that sex, but she like hits on every single ball player at the end.
Yeah, tell me about it, right?
And then ends up with a Christian at the end.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And I did read that the bull outside the home run was something that
steak.
Yeah, was something that they put in for the movie.
Yeah,
but the Durham Bulls kept it.
Yeah,
and even to this day, when they have a new stadium now, the bull is part of it. And if somebody hits the bull, there's a restaurant that gives them a steak. If they hit the grass, they get a free salad.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's great. That's awesome minor league stuff right there. It's beautiful.
Minor league baseball is awesome that way. If you get a chance, I think it's called The King of Second Chances. It's about Bill Veeck.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And how he bounced back from the disaster that was Disco Demolition Night.
Went to Minnesota, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He ended up owning like four or five minor league baseball teams. And minor league baseball was built for the Veecks.
Yes, I mean, it was.
They were just awesome people. It's meant to be a lot of fun. And of course, there's the Savannah Bananas, too, which they take a whole new comic level. They're kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters of minor league baseball.
Yeah. I mean, we used to be, before King County Cougars got demoted out of being a minor league team, because now they're a beer league. And beer leagues are kind of similar in a way, but it doesn't have that same
investment
in them.
They're not an affiliate anymore?
No, they're nothing. King County is an affiliate. That's sad. Literally a beer league. Yep.
there was a bunch of good players that came through.
Yeah, they were affiliated with like Oakland A's, the Cubs, bunch of teams.
Yeah.
No minor when during COVID, they got dropped.
When I worked for the radio station that played their games, it was the Florida Marlins.
Yeah.
And Josh Beckett was like the big player that came out.
And Dontrell Willis played there too, I believe.
Yes. And one of your favorite ex-Cub players that's still playing was with the Nationals, I think, for a while. Clemente. No, he was on the Cubs championship team. He was one of the first guys, though, to be...
Oh, David Ross?
Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber?
Okay,
yeah.
He came up as a catcher.
Did he?
Okay, yeah, he did.
He did come up as a strike out or hit a homer. That's Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, he's a perfect three-outcome player. Yeah, he plays for the Phillies now. Cool. He's actually a really good player for the Phillies right now.
Most of these locations are still there. Bar is still there. The only thing about the bar was the back of the bar was actually on a studio lot. That wasn't part of the bar, unfortunately. But baseball through the window. So
the bar does have that window framed in their bar.
They have a recreation of the window because the window was busted up. So they do have a recreation of it. But the bar looks almost exactly the same as it did in 1988. That's where we get to see all three of them meet for the first time. Yeah, Nuke, who's dancing with all the girls, and he's a horn dog right now.
He's a little Hawaiian shirt and his white pants. He's definitely a horn dog. Yep.
And then you got the clown prince at baseball talk with Annie.
I love this scene though too, where Nuke calls him out to into the alley and he wants to fight him, and Crash is like, oh, damn it. He's like, why did I do this? And then he asks him to toss him to throw the ball at him.
You could hit the broadside of a barn.
You couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat. Yeah. And in the back of his mind, he remembers, oh, if he starts to think about where he's going to throw, he's going to miss.
Right.
But would anybody think that way? I mean, come on.
Crash does. Crash because...
95 fastball. I'm scared enough about hurting somebody. Because who's going to go to jail? It's not going to be Crash. It's going to be Nuke if he hits him, actually. So, even though it's iconic, I don't know if it's a really good scene. I disagree.
No, I think it's a perfect scene because it's telling the story that this guy has no confidence in himself. That is what Crash Davis is there for, is to build confidence in this guy.
Well, I get it, but why would anybody... Nobody will throw that baseball, especially somebody like Nuke. Nuke is not a bad guy. He's very immature, but he's not a bad guy. So he's not going to try to take somebody's head off. Or even if it hits him directly in the chest, that's going to cause some damage. I just don't know if I can accept that.
In front of all those people, that's the thing. He's like,
it's like attempted murder, for crying out loud. If he does throw the ball and Crash hits hurt, who's going to jail?
Well, they're also short a catcher then, too. That's fine. Whatever. He was confident that he wasn't even going to throw it near him, and he didn't.
I mean, it's iconic, and I understand why it works, but at the same time, there are problems about that scene. But they're very minor problems, so.
I like it. I think it's a great scene, because it doesn't even flinch.
And then she takes them both home. I just love
Nuke. They're just sitting on the couch there.
Somebody didn't know that. Was somebody here?
Right. He's just sitting wide, and they're like, hey, what's going on? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
But this is also another iconic monologue that Kevin Costner delivers. Up until a few years ago, I believed a lot of what
he said.
Kevin Costner said, especially about the baseball aspects of it, because, of course, we discussed in our JFK episode, I don't believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. And it's funny that Kevin Costner then played Garrison, who. For the longest time, I didn't believe in the designated hitter.
So
it's an iconic thing. Here's the problem that I have. Do you remember, it was probably like 10, 15 years ago now, ESPN was doing commercials for Sunday Night Baseball with Carl Ravitch and Peter Gammons, and they recreated the scene, and Peter Gammons was Annie. I can't get that out of my head now whenever I watch this.
Thanks for bringing it back into our heads.
There we go. All right. I haven't thought about that in years.
going back before they actually get to the Annie's house, the look on Crash's face when she invites them both to her place. What do they think is going to happen? Do they think a threesome is going to happen here?
Pretty much.
Crash looks at him and like, we're going to have some fun now.
That's
kind of look. And I'm sitting here going, why would both of us would go back to her place, right? So I just wanted to say that because I just love the look on Crash's face when she said that.
I mean, that's obviously what he thinks is going to happen.
Exactly.
I guess in baseball circles, female groupies are called Annies.
Are they really?
Shelton named her Annie. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
That's funny. Seriously? They're called Annies? That's awesome.
I guess so. I don't know why. And it's probably something from the early 1900s or something.
Minor league baseball groupies. That's something I would have never pictured, actually.
Yeah, me neither.
But it does make you wonder why Crash went back, because when she does kind of set the ground rules, he kind of doesn't like offset it all. It just kind of
because he thinks it's bullshit. Because he's there to have fun. I mean, he's not there to
try out. But he also says something to the extent that it's like he knows that he may not be here very long. So that's kind of an in and out type of deal, I guess, for him.
Literally,
in and out.
Yes, literally. And but the speech was iconic. And then when he leaves, I just love Tim Robbins. I don't know what's wrong with them. I want you bad. So
yeah, it's funny.
And then she ties him up and then starts reading poetry to them.
And you can just tell that he's like, oh, you're really tired, huh? It's like, you read poetry all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny the next day.
Yeah, it's more tiring than what they want to do.
Got fungus on your on your shower shoes.
Yeah.
When you make it to the show, then you can have fungus on your shower shoes. Then you're quirky.
I love Costner's description of the show, too, how he kind of, all these guys gather around him like he's telling a campfire story. He's like, you've been to the show?
Yeah, it's almost like he's a sage or something at that point. Yeah. Telling them what it's like. And I really like that speech as well. You've been batting practice with real white balls.
White balls and people pick up your luggage for you. And,
when I have long legs.
Right.
He was in the show for 29 days or something? Or
21 days.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
We didn't really talk about how many pictures at the beginning of the movie where they talk about what 18 guys.
New league record.
Struck out. You see, that is new league
record. Also a new league record.
Yes.
The mascot twice.
Also new league record.
I think the most dangerous place to be in this movie is the mascot.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially later when he goes, throw it at the mascot.
Throw it at the mascot. Yeah. Why?
Just
to keep him off balance.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have the commentators in the background, the announcers in the background.
Oh, I love the commentators, too. Yeah.
It's like, that's real. That's
it's like
real.
It's like Foghorn Leghorn doing baseball play-by-play.
Right.
Well, later on,
LaLouche has got the arm.
They do the radio one where they clip the bats together to make it like a hit. Yeah, it's a lot of good old school type of thing going on there, and I really appreciate that. But then you see the ball going through, which almost takes them all out. I'm kind of surprised they are where they are with him. I'm surprised he's even in A-ball.
There's nothing really below A-ball.
That's for Peely.
Whatever Major League Baseball team drafted him thought enough of him to give him a good signing bonus because he does have a Porsche.
There he goes.
He's gotten a big signing bonus, so they believe in his arm. They just need somebody to be able to harness his arm.
But he only has one pitch. He doesn't even know how to throw a curveball. He just has the one fastball, and that's
what Crash is there for.
It doesn't make sense to pay with that much money. I could understand him being a project and everything, but for somebody to be given that much money, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if we're talking authentic prospect, I don't think they get somebody to be thrown 100 miles per hour, but it's basically Rick Vaughn from Major League.
Without the prison time.
What league were you in? California Penal.
California Penal.
Never heard of it. Yeah. How'd you get there? Stole a car. Yeah. when we could talk about some great sports movies, I mean, Major League is definitely right up there.
We'll talk about that at the end, of course.
That's a fun movie as well. But yeah, it just, it does, for me, it just seems like it's kind of weird that it would have this much investment. But it makes for a great, makes for a great movie.
But teams do that all the time.
You get Porsches to people who can't, you know, that can hurt somebody with a fastball.
I mean, signing bonuses. I mean, you hear guys getting big signing bonuses all the time.
Do we know that Lelouch didn't come from money?
Well, isn't his dad's like a Christian? Looked like a Christian preacher or something, because he asked Annie if she believes in Jesus and everything like that.
Praise the Lord. But he knows mentioned somewhere out there about that he got the Porsche because he was a baseball player.
Right, yeah.
So he does mention that. But for me, I understand what you're saying, Ted. But usually you have a pitcher who has more control and has more than just one pitch. That's stretching it. If it was somebody that maybe if they would have done where he lost confidence, like maybe in high school, he was a phenom.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the way, he lost his confidence. Then maybe that would work a little bit better. Hey, I never played minor league baseball.
Me neither.
And the writer that did this did makes me want to know a little bit more about the guy who the story is based off of. If he was considered such a high prospect with bat control, that was based of a player who played in the 1950s, 1960s era.
If you're talking about prospects, the movie that really comes to mind for me would be Moneyball.
Oh yeah,
you put all that money into that kid, and he comes up and he's just a complete failure.
Right.
Sad.
Yeah.
Another great sports baseball movie.
Oh, yeah.
So,
no, it is.
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit more about Annie. Annie's kind of one of those all about the church of baseball.
That's exactly right.
But she also has some weird thoughts, like the cosmos and, you know, everything working together. And she reads a lot because she's also a teacher. When she teaches English lit.
In the off season.
At the junior college.
Yeah. At junior college. So she's a very educated lady. Like I said, I think she's like a little bit all over the place. I mean, if you look at her house, she has different things all around. It's like she invests in part in Buddhism and part in
She tried all the world religions.
Right, and I think that kind of is represented in her house. Different things all around her that kind of have contributed to her quirkiness. And this comes from Susan Sarandon, a look about her that is ageless. She's somebody who even now almost looks exactly the same as she did 40 years. I mean, she has a look about her that is just, I guess you could say it's unique, but also relatable.
What do you think? A little help there? A little plastic surgery?
No. I don't think
plastic surgery. You don't think she's had any?
I think that's just her natural look. And I think throughout the years, she's just one of those people who just age well into getting older. She comes off.
She's a timeless beauty.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's not the most sexy person in the world. She's not the most beautiful woman in the world. But for whatever reason, when she's on screen, you're just so focused on her and how she is that you can't take your eyes off her.
She's a brilliant actress as well.
Well, she throws in that southern accent to boot for this movie, and it just kind of adds to Bertrand. I don't think people just hook up with this character just to get laid. There's something about her that they just want to be around. She's just one of those women that you want to be around because she's so well-rounded. Even the baseball managers and stuff, they're intrigued because, you know, you're not bending your back, and they'd be like, well, if anybody knows that you're not doing something, it would be Annie. So they actually respect her take on baseball. I really enjoy her character. In a sense, I kind of actually wishes that she would have been with Newt. I mean, it's kind of weird, I know. Which, in a way, she did because, you know, her and Tim Robbins eventually hooked up and they've had kids.
They're not together anymore, are they?
I don't believe so.
No. I don't think they ever officially got married. I think it was like a long Kurt Russell type deal.
Common law kind of thing.
I love her character. I think her character is amazing. And I think one of the things that makes it so amazing is her character is so unique. Her character is unlike any other character in any other sports movie ever. And it's never been duplicated. It's funny because it's like, because she is so well, like Ken said, she is so well-rounded. She's so well-read. But she has this pull to baseball. It's magnetic. It makes everybody gravitate towards her. She's an awesome character, and Susan Sarandon is brilliant in this role. And I'm actually kind of surprised that there wasn't some sort of a Golden Globe nomination.
I'm really surprised, actually, or a supporting actress at least.
Yeah, she plays this role so brilliantly.
Right, because it's a sports movie. You know, probably. Sports movies never probably get the benefit of the doubt. This kind of went under the radar, even though it was a summer release. I believe it didn't make a lot at the box office. I think it made enough to be profitable, but I don't think it was like a
50.9. So
that's pretty good. But at the same time, it wasn't a box office like juggernaut. It became more popular once it became on cable and rentals and things of that nature.
I think the fact that it's so unique is what makes it so gravitating. Because usually sports movies follow a very set formula.
Very scripted.
And this is so not that. I mean, from the first opening monologue, you're in for something completely different.
Because most sports movies have a winning moment. They win like a home run at the bottom of the ninth or last second shot at a basketball game. And this movie doesn't do those things because this movie is about the characters. We talk about how New York City is a character, like how certain areas are a character. But baseball is the character here in this movie. And I think that's different from other sports movies. We're looking at baseball, how baseball is being presented to us. It's like with the Crash. Crash is talking to him about everybody can hit a fastball on the show. It's the breaking stuff that everybody has problems with. They throw ungodly breaking stuff. And that's why Crash has problems in the show, because he knows how to hit a fastball. He struggles probably with, even though I think he hits a home run off of a off speed because he knows it's coming. But I think that's probably why someone like Crash doesn't make it to the big leagues for a long period of time, because of that ungodly breaking stuff. We're getting educated about baseball by Crash as well. Even though he's telling this to Newt, we're getting the education as well. And I think this is baseball 101 for us. Even though we've been baseball fans for years, even coming into this, anybody who watches this movie, it's a lesson in baseball.
You brought up something interesting that I want to just touch real quick. I love the inner dialogue that the characters have as well, especially Nuke and Crash. When Crash is at the bat and he's saying, "Throw me that weak ass shit." He's having like, that dialogue.
I love it. He's like, "Throw me that weak ass shit."
Meat. Yeah. But then Nuke has the same inner monologue goes through his mind too, where you hear him thinking, "I really like that technique." And I think that adds a little bit something too, because you know that those guys have to sit when they're on the mound or at the plate, that they have thoughts that go through their mind, and it kind of gives a little bit of an insight as to what they're thinking. And
one of the things that I love about this film is when he's out there and he's pitching and he's got the garter belt on, but he's streaming. He's naked, right out. He's stressed out. He's freaking out. I've remembered a number of times, and I don't know if anybody else does this, but when I've been stressed out at a job and I'm sleeping in my bed, I've almost been sitting on my work, but I'm naked, but I'm underneath the covers. It's so weird.
Never happened.
But, so for me, I understand why he has the string, though, because he's so stressed out that he's afraid that people are going to think of him as a fraud. I love the look on his face after he throws the pitch. He has this, like, really, like, I don't know if it's a scared type of look, with some, like a freak out type of look. And for whatever reason, I just love it. I think it's a perfect look for the situation that he's in. And then, of course, he wakes up and it's a nightmare. I mean, I had that dream where it's just, I'm in bed, but I'm still working.
I've had those dreams.
And he's doing the same thing. He's having a dream that he's still working because he's stressed out. I really appreciate those type of things, the mental aspect of this movie, not focusing just on talent. Like you were saying, Crash is sitting there going, Annie, who's this Annie? And then he has to step out of the batter's box.
Mm-hmm.
You have Nuke who's thinking, oh, I'm love a shutout. And then you have him dismissing signs from Crash. at first it's because he doesn't trust Crash. and he just wants to bring the heat.
And then when I announce my presence with authority.
That's a great line. And then later on, when he's got that shutout going, he doesn't want to throw the fastball. He wants to throw the curveball because he's now a little bit confused a little bit.
You told him it was coming, right?
Yeah.
Yep, sure did.
I love that thing where the guy hits the homer, then he stands there and he goes, I give you a gift. He just
Start running. And then when the next time he goes, when you talk to me, talk kindly.
Yeah. These are just great lines. I don't know if this is something that the writer, these are the things that he heard throughout his whole career and just took a bunch of these lines and threw them in there. That's the only way I can think of how this was made. We were talking about awards. I mean, the screenplay only got some New York City type of, you know, award, and maybe it is prestige, but it's not like we talk about Golden Globes and Oscars and things of that nature. This movie should have had some type of nomination.
Yeah.
I don't know. 1988? What is better than this with the dialogue? It's so good.
Ron Shelton is really known for writing good dialogue. I mean, if you look at White Man Can't Jump, that's another movie that he wrote. It is really dialogue-based. Ron Shelton has this knack for writing how people really talk. It's really good.
And Ron Shelton actually last year came out with a book. It is called The Church of Baseball.
Oh, cool.
Really? About minor league baseball, I assume, huh?
Yeah, I would think so.
I have to see if I can get it on Audible.
We've, amazingly enough, have reviewed other movies by Shelton that he's written, Blue Chips.
Blue Chips.
We haven't reviewed it yet, but when we can get Michelle on again, we'll be doing it for Tin Cup.
Of course. Tin Cup. Yes. Michelle loves Tin Cup.
Another costume.
He also directed Tin Cup, too. Yeah. So. But before this, he...
Is that sarcasm or she hate that movie?
She despises that
movie. Oh, we got to get her on. Oh, beautiful.
One of my favorite movies that I saw before Bull Durham that he wrote was The Best of Times with Robin Williams.
Yeah. Kurt Russell.
That's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
This was his first time directing, but this was only the third film he wrote. He wrote The Best of Times and another movie called Under Fire, which I've never seen that one. He did also write Cobb, which that one isn't very good.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones and Ron DeWall.
Not a good movie.
And a lot of that is under dispute as to just how horrible a person Ty Cobb really was.
True. When you have a character that's despicable, it's hard to like the movie. You have to have a well-rounded character for a movie to work.
What's come out in the last, 5 years has really disputed a lot of how bad of a guy he really was. Because I guess he did a lot of good, and it's just never talked about.
I'd be interested in reading a biography on Cobb now that you mentioned. That's just a pet up.
Yeah, there's one that came out a few years ago that really painted a more accurate picture of Ty Cobb.
Again, let's lead in the part two.
After a rough start, Duke becomes a dominant pitcher by midseason, adding to the Bulls' good fortune, and in the end, he is caught up to the major leagues. This incites jealous anger and Crash, who is frustrated by Nuke's failure to recognize all the talent he has. Nuke leaves, Annie ends their relationship, and Crash overcomes his jealousy to leave Nuke with some final words of advice. The Bulls, now having no use for Nuke's mentor, release Crash. Crash then presents himself as at Annie's house, and the two basically get it on for both a weekend-long love-making session. Crash then leaves Annie to seek a further minor league position. Crash joins another team and breaks the minor league record for career home runs. Nuke is seen one last time being interviewed by the press as a major leaguer, reciting the cliche answers that Crash had taught him earlier. Crash then retires as a player and returns to Durham, where Annie tells him she's ready to give up her annual affairs with the boys. Crash tells her that he is thinking about becoming a manager for a minor league team in Vizela. The film ends with Annie and Crash dancing in Annie's candlelit living room. And that's the end of Bull Durham. We didn't talk about it, but of course this team earlier on was 8-16. And one of the best scenes in this whole movie was the shower scene where he goes, it talks about the
lollygaggers. He was being too nice to them, so he changed.
Right, so he went to Crash, and Crash is like, "They're kids."
You gotta scare him.
Yeah, scare him.
Yeah.
He takes all those bats and throws them into the shower.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's probably my favorite scene of the whole movie. And we found out that the actor who portrayed the actor,
Trey Wilson.
And I guess Trey Wilson had died the next year. His performance is very underrated here. I think he's a great A manager. You know, he's not AAA or AA, he's an A manager. He has some smarts. You know, you do see why he is a manager at times, but he's also clueless at other times. And I think that's a very good combination that is needed in this movie, because this movie relies on comic timing from time to time. It's not a true comedy, but life has funny moments in it. And that's why I think this movie is really good, is because the funny moments in this movie are real. They're realistic funny moments. They're not funny just to make people laugh, just to, you know, get a ha-ha out of us. It's true life humor. What also makes this movie work is just the supporting cast that's around them, where if you have somebody who has a cursed glove, that's something that people believe in. But when they talk about why you might be playing well, you respect the streak. It's things of those type of natures that make this movie just move along really well.
Well, you touched on my favorite scene. So my favorite scene in the movie is the huddle at the pitching mound. And then they send Robert Wool's character out, and Crash says, you know, we're dealing with some serious shit out here. And because nobody can decide what to get Millie, and I can't think of the other guy's name, the Christian that she ends up marrying, what to get them for their wedding.
Candlesticks.
Yeah. And the Latin player, and so his girlfriend put a curse on his glove, so they need a live chicken for him to sacrifice. And
that's another major league thing that this guy is comparable as they have to sacrifice the live chicken and make it, right?
And they end up buying him KFC. Right. Yeah.
That's to be good.
That whole scene is great. And Robert Wool actually ad-libbed his responses. But yeah, no, I love that scene. So Kevin Costner looks the same. So we're dealing with some serious shit out here.
In fact, I think they did a number of takes. That ad-lib was done on the last take. The director basically says, okay, we'll do it one more time, but no, Robert, just do whatever, say whatever. And they decided to use that at the end.
They're real guys that are, you know, dealing with real life situations that has nothing to do with baseball. But I also love the fact too that Crash defends Millie, and he said that he would personally hurt whoever decided to tell the baseball player that, you know, that she was
half the league. Yeah.
Right. And that's a relationship too between Annie and Millie that I really like their relationship too. That's, I mean, we don't get a lot of it, but
you all deserve to wear white.
Right. I like that.
I think there could have been a little bit more, though. I think that would have been nice to add a little bit more. I mean, this movie is pretty perfect. There's not much I would change in this movie, but I do like the relationship. That's what we start off with in the beginning of the movie, is their relationship. Mm-hmm. So it would have been nice to have that, you know, a little bit more. How long did it take to know that he was one of them?
Five hours.
Yeah. And then the wedding cake. They bring him away.
Oh, yeah.
That's so messed up.
It's so weird because the happiness in that scene is counterpointed by Crash being released at the same time.
And you're leaving. So you have all these things happening at the same time.
Right.
Neither one of them are there for the wedding. As far as we know, we don't see them at the wedding.
Well, Crash is. Crash is out on the field.
Oh, is he?
It's after the game when he gets sat down. And then, of course, you have Crash and Annie having their session, I guess.
Sexathon.
Yeah.
I like it earlier when, so Nuke isn't having sex with Annie because of the streak.
Right.
And Crash basically doesn't tell him not to have sex with her, but to respect the streak, right?
Right.
And I do like it when she comes and just walks right in. He's kind of ironing his clothes. And it's just barges in. She's mad about the fact that he's messing with her. Which is interesting because I wouldn't think that Annie really care about the sex, but she did. Towards the end of that streak there, she was kind of like trying to do whatever she could to get Nuke to have sex with her. You know, there's that scene where she's like putting her leg right in front of him and having her unstap her stocking.
Barter belt, yeah.
Barter belt. and she's trying to seduce him, and when it doesn't work, she goes over to Crash and just lays into him. And then, of course, he tells her how she's wrong, and she realizes how wrong she is, and that she's in love with them. Great scenes. I mean, the pace of it is also really... I mean, the pace of this movie for the non-baseball scenes are really well done.
One of my favorite scenes, we brought it up earlier, is the one where he's on the mound and tells the hitter what the fastball was, and he hits the thing out. He goes, something that far should have a stewardess on it, you know? I love the one-liners. I love the banter between Costner and Robbins in this. It seems so authentic and so real, like something you would see in a minor league game. Whenever they go to the mound, I'm always like, what are they talking about? The fans really don't take, in any sport, minor league sports, as seriously as they do, obviously, with major league. So I guess, do you think the players take it as seriously, too? Is it just kind of like, you know, it's a paycheck. We just go, you know, game to game, city to city.
Yeah, I think they do. They are trying to get to the major leagues, and they all have aspirations of getting there.
I think some of them just want to play baseball. That's what the manager says at the beginning of the movie. You know, where do I get out of this? You get to come to the ballpark and play ball.
I like the way the movie ends as well. I mean, we're fairly confident that Crash and Annie end up together. But you never know. It's just kind of left there.
And that's the thing is, I mean, I would have liked to have known that Crash did become a manager. I know there was talk about possibly having a sequel. I know Costner was opened up to play a manager in the old Durham Satan sequel. So that would have been interesting.
That's probably why they left it open like that, too.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm glad that didn't happen, because, I mean, we all saw Major League 2.
It doesn't always come out like that. And plus, if you wait 10, 15 years.
Bad.
Here's the thing. They caught lightning in a bottle here.
Right.
And they created something really special. And just having a sequel to have a sequel is... Some things are just best left untouched.
There's a story you can tell that, first of all, I would put it in this kind of frame. I think if you waited 30 years, I think it would be great, because with Crash's minor league manager, and you have these players now who have social media accounts, and they're on the phones all the time, and they're just, they don't concentrate.
He'd be out of he would have lost his mind.
And that's what I'm saying. Maybe have... In this movie, what makes it work is also Crash is on that edge of quitting and staying. He's at that age where, how much longer can I do this? And so if you did that again as a sequel, but as a manager,
how much longer can I do that? Exactly. Yeah,
he wouldn't be a manager today. He doesn't believe in the saber metric and all of that stuff. It's all about...
I don't know.
All about numbers.
Well, no, no, not...
Minor league player.
Not today. I mean, if you did a sequel before all of the metrics, if you did a sequel in like a 91 or a 92, it's still pre-internet. It's still...
Right.
So if you were to do it, you're right. You couldn't... Unless you did a sequel today... That was based on the year 1990 or 91 or 92.
Or you bring it in when those metrics started to be looked at.
And that phased him out of the game?
They're phasing him out of the game. Yeah, I think that would have been a good time to have done that as well. Maybe it's too late now. I mean, Costner is it's probably in his mid-60s.
I think he's pushing 70. Some of those major league managers are up there,
I mean, it could be where he could play a general manager of a football team or something like that.
Wow, he could, right?
Trade all your draft picks away. So.
Oh.
For one player. Kind of like a Mike Ditka.
I love that movie. Guilty pleasure.
That's a guilty pleasure, but
Total guilty pleasure.
It's so bad.
It's so unrealistic.
It's the opposite of Bull Durham.
It is. All right, well, we've had a great conversation here about Bull Durham, so let's talk about our reviews. We'll start off with Ted.
Okay, so the critic that I have chosen is Gene Siskel from the Chicago Tribune. He states, "The acting in Bull Durham cannot be faulted and should be remembered at Oscar time. Sarandon has one of the juiciest female roles in years, and she makes you think no one could play it better." I couldn't agree with that more. The acting and the writing here set this movie apart for me. We've discussed the one-liners. They're some of the most iconic in any sports movie. This movie is just it's a fun movie. If you've not seen it, run out and see it. It's definitely worth your time. It's a great way to spend an hour and 30 minutes. It's not a perfect movie, but it's close. So for me, it's 4.5 hooks. This is one of my top 5 favorite sports movies. It's a movie that I watch probably maybe 2 or 3 times a year. It's an underrated love story as well, I think, too. A love story to baseball and a love story between characters as well.
All right. Thanks, Ted. So I'm going to go with Janet Maslin of the New York Times, who says Bull Durham is a film with spring fever, a giddy, playful look at life in baseball's minor leagues. I couldn't agree more either. It's a very accurate review of the movie, and she loved it, and I love it. There's really nothing bad I can say about this movie. The casting is incredible. I can't imagine anyone else in the roles. It is a fun movie. The one-liners are probably some of the best in not necessarily even a sports movie, but in a movie in general. It is just a movie that flows all the way through. There's really no slow parts in this movie. I love it. You know, it's hard for me not to give it 5 hooks, but 5 hooks is just for a movie that is like, you know, the top tier of the top tier. So I'm going to give this one 4.5 hooks, but I agree with Ted. If you haven't seen it, get out from under the rock or your parents' basement and go out there and rent it, download it, do something. But if you are a baseball fan and you haven't seen this movie, you've got to screw loose. It's one of the best ones out there. What are your thoughts, Ken?
I'm going to go with Jay Boyer of the Orlando Sentinel. He writes, Ron Shelton, who wrote and directed this film, displays a knowledge of and affection for the national pastime. You can see it in the knowing the detail he brings to even the minor characters. And I'm also going to agree with you guys. It's a 4.5 hook movie. The one-liners on this movie, like we said earlier, this movie should at least got a nomination for the screenwriting. The script here is incredible. I just don't understand why it wasn't as highly praised. The critics score is great here. I'm not sure why the audience score is what it is. Maybe it's just the disinterest in baseball over the years. I don't know. Yeah, this is a perfect sports movie. And to me, and you guys can chime in here, for me, this is the greatest sports movie ever made.
All right. Well, that kind of leads us into another little small discussion about what is the greatest sports movie ever made. Let me ask you guys this. Are we including like movies like The Color of Money or The Big Lebowski in that, bowling and pool?
I wouldn't put The Big Lebowski in it because it really doesn't focus on bowling, but I would put something like Color of Money because pool is a big part of the movie.
You know, movies like this, it is so hard. I mean, this is such an accurate portrayal of minor league baseball. Like North Dallas 40 is an accurate portrayal of football. It doesn't have the one-liners that this one has, but I mean, it's just a great movie.
Coach, the closest thing for me outside of this movie would be Cinderella Man by Ron Howard and Russell Crowe. So, yeah, I really appreciate that movie.
This movie is probably top 3 for me, but my favorite sports movie of all time is always going to be Slapshot. I love Slapshot so much.
Oogie Oglethorpe.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of those movies that's kind of a little bit on the raunchy side, too. You know, it's a movie of its era, you know, late 70s hockey.
That's a precursor to a movie like Bull Durham, because it does show life in, I think, a minor league hockey.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Like that movie, and I look at like Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
As movies that kind of have an authentic feel to them.
Children's baseball.
Children's lowly baseball.
Youth baseball. Yeah.
Where parents and stuff take a little too much to heart, right?
But Major League is right up there, too. Major League is just one of those movies that's just right on par.
I think it's a different type of movie. It's not as authentic as these other movies that we just talked about. Like I was saying earlier, I think Bull Durham, it's not a comedy, but it has comedy aspects.
Because of the sarcastic overtones of it.
Well, Major League is a comedy that happens to have baseball around it. So I think that's, I think they're on kind of like opposite ends of the spectrum, but it doesn't mean that it's not as good. Another movie I would throw in there is A League of Their Own.
I know you love that movie.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
The greatest sports movie. That's so tough to pin down.
Caddyshack?
Yeah, Caddyshack. I mean,
how about Jerry Maguire? It's kind of a sports movie, right?
Yeah. Because there's so many sports movies that I like. We had an episode on Rocky III.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had an episode on Hoosiers. White Men Can't Jump, I really like a lot too.
10 years would be basketball, wouldn't it?
The basketball.
Basketball?
Yeah. Basketball, yeah.
That's the one I want.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear God in heaven.
Yes. The Hall & Oates story.
I can get suckered in really easily to Miracle as well.
Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks.
Miracle's a great movie, though.
It is.
Kurt Russell is great.
Yeah,
in that.
Kurt Russell is really good as Herb. Yeah.
It's okay. It's,
how about Pride of the Yankees?
Well, Lou Gehrig is one of my favorite human beings of all time. He's always been one of my favorite sports figures.
And of course, the favorite made for TV movie, Brian's Song, a Chicago favorite.
I like Boston Lance, so Requiem for a Dream.
Requiem for a Dream?
No, not a dream.
You mean Requiem for a Heavyweight?
Yeah, Requiem for a Heavyweight.
With Anthony Quinn.
Two different kind of movies.
Requiem for a Dream is a really, really different movie.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any sports involved in that movie.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to see a Darren Aronofsky sports movie.
Do you know what one of my favorite sports movies is? It's very kind of underrated, but I don't even consider it a sports movie. But I was just thinking about it. Breaking Away.
Breaking Away is good.
Yeah. I also really like The Hustler.
Hustler,
Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman.
Yeah,
I would definitely recommend American Flyers.
I didn't like American Flyers. I did not like American Flyers.
On those movies that I definitely have watched.
Well, I'd like hell to watch it or like it, but I just couldn't.
A movie that won awards, Chariots of Fire.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't care for that movie at all. It was boring as hell.
I'm a big fan of a movie called Wimbledon.
You like Ali?
I did not like Ali. It glosses over some very important parts of Ali's career. And then one of the movies that I like, it's kind of like a made for I think TV movie called Soul of the Game. It's kind of like about Satchel Paige and all them, you know, back in the day. And I also like 61 about Roger Maris.
And of course, if we're talking movies, sports movies, we got to talk Draft Day.
Oh, gosh.
It's Draft Day.
Oh, we haven't mentioned The Natural.
Sure. Field of Dreams.
I'm one of those few people that would rank Field of Dreams as my least favorite Costner sports movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even
fucking heresy.
Even below For the Love of the Game?
Yes.
How about Any Given Sunday?
Football movies.
I like Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
I love Lawrence Taylor taking a chainsaw to the car.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I think it's a little lush.
Hoop Dreams.
But we can go on for hours and hours.
Oh,
and
I know. There's so
Hoop
many
Dreams
of
is
them.
A documentary.
Yeah.
Draft Day, you pancake-eating motherfucker.
It's a guilty pleasure. I always got to somehow move that one in. All right. So review-wise, we love the movie. There's very little of anything bad we can say about it, which is awesome. What is the next movie we're going to be doing, Ken?
Well, we're going to stick with the sports movies, but we're also going to recognize an actor who had recently passed away, Louis Bassett Jr., recently passed away. And we were going to do this movie anyway, so...
Officer and a Gentleman?
That's not a sports movie.
No, Ted, we're doing a movie that no one's ever heard of. And what movie is that, Ken?
Oh, that's right.
We're going to be doing a movie called Digstown.
Yes.
Does have the very admirable Louis Gossett Jr.
Yes.
And the very detestable James Woods.
Oh, gosh.
So.
But he's quite good in it. But yes.
Also has Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern, yeah.
And Oliver Platt.
Right. And a lot of bad Southern accents.
A lot of bad Southern accents.
Digstown. So if you like boxing, tune in for Digstown. Ted, where can they find us on the World Wide Web?
We can be found on Twitter/X at @HookedOn_movies. Come over and have a nice conversation. Tell us what you think about Bull Durham. What's your favorite line? And of course, whatever podcast version you're listening to us on, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Good Pods. Leave us a 5-star rating and review if you can. It helps us get noticed. And leave us a review there as well. Here again, tell us what's your favorite line.
Sweet. Facebook, how's it going, Ken? A lot of great articles and stories and back and forth stuff there.
Yes, continue to join us on the discussion on our Facebook page, Book Bang Movies. We talk about movies and trailers and opinions about actors. And we also do remembrances of actors who are no longer with us. But feel free to jump in the conversation and we can go back and forth.
And that's why we were originally going to be doing this movie, but I think we moved it up a little bit, Ken. Is that right?
Yes.
Thanks, Sam.
We moved it up a little bit. We were going to do it later on in the year, but since Louis doesn't junior about it, we decided to do it.
There you go. So join us for Digstown on the Hooked on Movies podcast. As always, this means something, and I'm talking about the podcast.
See you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies. The Rose in the Front, boys.